Hello, Darklings, and welcome to the Nocturnal Mysteries Podcast, a show about the paranormal, supernatural, mysterious, and things that go bump in the night. I'm your host, Jenny. Please come and join me. Sit down and place your fingers on the planchette, and let's jump right into this nocturnal mystery. Listener, May 1st, 1957 was a day like any other. Larry King made his first ever radio broadcast, and if you were anywhere, you were probably hearing the number one song, All Shook Up by Elvis Presley. Although nothing overly remarkable happened on this day, something did take place that would change the lives of many in the future. One of the most prolific serial killers in America's history would make his entrance into the world, a man who would take 22 lives before his own death. On May 1st, 1957, in Hackensack, New Jersey, Charles Lee Ray was born. New parents, Peter and Elizabeth Ray, were overjoyed with this new addition to their family. Although Charles always claimed that killing has been in his family for generations, reports show that he had a loving family growing up and was adored by his parents. Unknown to both of them, throughout his childhood, Charles suffered from a severe case of sadistic and homicidal urges. He reported that when he was 7 years old, after returning home from trick-or-treating on Halloween, he started checking all of his candy. While going through his loot, he decided to pick up an apple that he received and notice a razor blade stuck inside it. Knowing how dangerous this could be, he bit into it regardless, and claims that he smiled after the razor blade cut into his mouth, causing it to bleed. In 1965, on his 7th birthday, it has been reported that Charles used a mallet to knock the piñata to the ground and continued to aggressively smash it, even after it had fallen. After hearing the news on the radio that the Hackensack Slasher, a serial killer, was on the loose, Charles himself claimed that he delighted in plunging a knife into his birthday cake while thinking homicidal thoughts. Sometime later, the Hackensack Slasher broke into the Ray's home and murdered Charles's father right before his eyes. Terrified and in shock, his mother attempted to hide in a closet with him. By the time the Hackensack Slasher found them, he was shocked to see that Charles had already stabbed his own mother to death, claiming to have helped. Impressed by the boy's actions, as he slowly cleaned off Charles's pocket knife, the Hackensack Slasher gave him a piece of advice that he would never forget. Always cover your tracks. He returned the knife to Charles and fled the home. After his parents' deaths, Charles was placed in the Burlington County Home for Wayward Boys. He received extensive therapy from a woman named Dr. Amanda Mixter, who referred to him as Charlie. However, instead of helping a young Charles, Mixter encouraged him to embrace his homicidal tendencies. She is also credited with destroying whatever remaining humanity Charles had left, claiming to have found that part of him boring. During one of their sessions, she asked him if he planned on killing his mother or if it was a spontaneous decision. In another session in 1972, when Charles was 14, she asked him what method of killing is his favorite. He confirms that he likes both planned and spontaneous killings, but spontaneous killings are the most fun. During his time at the home, Charles was known for playing with the smaller children and attempted to mold three boys into following his killer footsteps, teaching them swear words and reading them fairy tales twisted to resolve around murder. One day, after tracking mud through the hallway, he was yelled at by the janitor, whom he retaliated against by slitting his throat. He cut off his hand and presented his mutilated body as Captain Hook to a group of children while they were imitating Peter Pan and the Lost Boys, leaving them horrified. All except one young boy. A boy named Eddie Caputo. The two would create a friendship that lasted for many years, with Caputo becoming his future accomplice. When the police came, Charles decided to run away, leaving the janitor's severed hand behind as a gift for Eddie, before fleeing into the night. As he was forced to flee from the home, he lost all contact with his therapist, Dr. Mixter. In 1984, Charles was involved with the deaths of 9 people and the injuries of another 5. According to state media, he was the chief suspect in a kidnapping and also shot a police officer who tried to stop and question him. In 1986, Charles met a woman named Delilah and a redheaded woman from a nightclub. After some time, he brought them back to a hotel. The two women began to engage in foreplay until Charles interrupted them by pulling the redheaded woman aside and holding a knife to her throat. To his surprise, instead of being afraid, the woman instructed him to do it. Shocked by this response, Charles chose to kill Delilah instead, stabbing her and then passing the knife to the redhead to join in. After killing her together, the couple kissed passionately on the bed where the redhead told Charles her name was Tiffany, before suggesting that Charles should be Chucky, which he wholeheartedly adopted. Charles and Tiffany left Hackensack in 1987 after killing a man that was attempting to sell a car, which they proceeded to drive out of town with. In 1988, Charles and Tiffany had relocated to Chicago, Illinois, during which he had a double life as a serial killer and a regular civilian. He studied voodoo under the guidance of a practitioner named John Bishop in an attempt to learn a way to cheat death. Unbeknownst to John, Charles perverted those teachings, which were intended to be used for good, to commit a series of ritual murders, eventually becoming known as the Lakeshore Strangler. By this point in time, his known accomplices that helped carry out his misdeeds were his continued lover, Tiffany Valentine, and his old mentee, Eddie Caputo. Among his many murder victims was a woman named Vivian Van Pelt, whom he stole a $6,000 ring from for profit, which Tiffany reports that she eventually found and mistook as an engagement ring that Charles had intended to give to her. It is also greatly implied that around this same time, Charles killed Tiffany's mother. While at a neighborhood barbecue, a mutual friend introduces him to a woman named Sarah Pierce and her family. Charles reported that he became obsessed with Sarah and wanting him for himself. He drives up to her husband Daniel one night and offers him a ride home. Sometime during this ride, Charles drowns him, making it look like an accident. He attends Daniel's funeral and proceeds to kidnap Sarah shortly after. Around the same time, tensions begin to rise between Charles and Tiffany when she found out that he was killing people without her. Tiffany then made an anonymous call to the police, telling them the whereabouts of the Lakeshore Strangler. The police found where Charles was holding Sarah and angrily believing she had turned him in, stabbed her in the stomach, which would leave her unborn child, Nika Pierce, paralyzed from the waist down. Not long after, a chase ensued between Charles and Detective Mike Norris. As this chase is going on, Eddie Caputo is waiting for Charles in the getaway van. Before he can reach it, Detective Norris shoots Charles in the back. The sounds of an approaching police car scare Eddie into driving off, leaving Charles behind. Still trying to get away, Charles looks around and makes a quick decision. He shoots off the lock and enters a nearby toy store. As he enters the store, alarm blaring, Detective Norris lands another shot on Charles, and this is when he suddenly realizes that he is dying. Before he dies, he grabs the closest thing to hand, a good guy doll, and begins a strange chant, calling upon the sky deity Dumbella. Dark clouds appear, lightning strikes, and the toy store blows up. The only thing left for Detective Norris to find is Charles's dead body, lying next to a good guy doll. It is 6-year-old Andy Barclay's birthday, and he sees a commercial for the good guy doll on TV. This was all he wanted for his birthday, but unfortunately, when he opens his present, there is just a bunch of clothes inside, not the good guy doll he so desperately wanted. Andy's mother, a widower named Karen, didn't know about the doll in time to save up for it, and is heartbroken that she let Andy down on her birthday. Her friend Maggie comes up with a solution and introduces her to a peddler in an alley who sells her a good guy doll for $50. While at work that day, Karen's boss informs her that even though it is her son's birthday, she has to work overtime to fill the place of an ill employee. Maggie agrees to babysit Andy, who is filled with joy, having finally received his very own good guy doll. The doll introduces itself, turning its head and blinking its eyes. "Hi, I'm Chucky, and I'm your friend till the end. Heidi-ho, ha ha ha." Later that night, Maggie says it's time for bed. Andy informs her that Chucky wants to watch the 9 o'clock news, but Maggie again says it's time for bed and turns off the TV. As Andy prepares for bed, Maggie quickly tidies the kitchen. When she returns to the living room, the TV has been turned back on and Chucky is sitting in front of it, with Andy nowhere in sight. Maggie immediately blames Andy for this, although he reported that he repeatedly denied it. She tucks Andy in bed with Chucky and goes to relax. Later on in the evening, Maggie is frightened by a noise coming from the hallway. Thinking it is Andy, she goes to investigate. Walking around the apartment, she originally finds nothing except a chair mysteriously placed against the entryway door. Startled by a sound from the kitchen, she slowly makes her way there. She finds a jar of spilt flour on the floor and wonders how that happened. As she goes to clean it up, she is again startled by a noise coming from behind the curtains. Cautiously going to investigate, she finds absolutely nothing. Turning around to attend to the mess, she is struck in the face with a hammer, stumbling backwards, dazed and in pain. Maggie crashes through the window and falls to her death. Karen returns home to find her building surrounded by emergency personnel. Rushing upstairs, she is greeted with the sight of police scouring her apartment. After she locates Andy, she is informed by Detective Norris about Maggie's death. As the police are investigating, they can see that there are very small footprints in the flour, and when they look at the soles of Andy's shoes, they are the same design, but there is no residue from the flour on them. Karen explains that Andy doesn't know how the footprints got there and had absolutely nothing to do with it. Detective Norris is insistent that someone made those footprints. If it wasn't Andy, then who? Before the police leave the apartment, Andy is playing with Chucky, and he discovers that Chucky has flour on the bottom of his shoes. When he tries to tell Detective Norris and his mother, they do not believe him. At some point later on, Karen finds Andy talking to Chucky. He tells her that his real name is Charles Lee Ray. He was sent down from heaven by Daddy to play with me. When asked if there was anything else, Karen reported that Andy exclaimed, "He said that Maggie was a real bitch and got what she deserved." The next day, Andy takes Chucky to school with him. Once Karen is out of sight, Andy reported that he left the school and walked in the opposite direction. He takes a train to the house where Eddie Caputo is hiding, all on the insistence of Chucky. Andy later claims that he needed to go to the bathroom, so he put Chucky in a chair and stepped away. Once alone, Chucky enters the house, opens the oven, and turns on the gas. Eddie is awoken by the noise and grabs his gun. Sure that someone is in his house, he approaches the kitchen door, opens it, and immediately shoots. The house blows up. The police find Andy and Chucky at the scene and take them both to the station. Andy still remembers being frustrated as he tries to tell the police that Chucky was the one who hurt Maggie and the one who took him to the house, but Karen interrupts, threatening Andy that if he doesn't start telling the truth, they're going to take him away from her. Andy tries to get Chucky to say something. Although Chucky doesn't seem to say anything, Andy seems to understand him, saying, "He told me never to tell about him, or he'd kill me." Suddenly stepping in, Dr. Ardmore, a doctor from County General Hospital who has been watching the interrogation with Andy, says he has seen more than enough, and that maybe Andy should stay at the hospital for a few days. Karen reported that she reluctantly agreed to this, thinking that it was the best thing for her son, and takes Chucky home with her. Back in the apartment, Karen reported that she is now wanting Chucky to say something, just to prove that Andy is not insane. As she picks up the box that he came in, she can still remember the shock she felt when the batteries fell out. The toy's batteries were still in the box. She opened the doll's battery compartment. It was empty. The head spins around and says, "Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?" She drops the doll in fright, threatening to throw the doll in the fire if it does not talk again. And it does talk. According to Karen, he begins calling her names and threatening her. And then after a struggle, Chucky bites her arm. She throws him off, and Chucky runs away. Karen chases after him, but by the time she gets to the ground floor and out the front door, Chucky is nowhere to be seen. Unsure where else to turn, Karen runs to Detective Norris, but even the bite mark on her arm won't convince him that Andy was telling the truth. Karen reported that she thought it was important to find the man who had sold her the doll. She wanted to know where it had come from. She remembers that after some rough handling, the man tells her and Detective Norris that he found the doll at a burned-down toy store in Wabash. What Detective Norris said next still chills her soul. He said that Charles Lee Ray died there. Detective Norris reported that he was sitting in his car when all of a sudden Chucky popped up behind him and began to strangle him with a cord. Fighting for his life and losing control of the car, Detective Norris grabbed the car's cigarette lighter and burned Chucky in the face with it. Chucky then started stabbing through the back seat. The car flipped upside down, and Chucky says that Detective Norris can't hurt him, but as he lands a shot on Chucky, it actually does seem to hurt him. Detective Norris says he still remembers the sight as the bullet wound actually bled. Chucky runs away and pays a visit to John Bishop, the man who Charles Lee Ray learned voodoo from, to find out what's going on. John explains that Chucky is turning human. The more time he spends inside this doll, the more human he becomes. Chucky asks for a way out of this. At first, John refuses, stating, "You're an abomination, an outrage against nature. You perverted everything I've taught you, and you use it for evil. And you have to be stopped." Chucky thought something like this might happen. He starts to play with a voodoo doll of John, breaking his arm and his leg. John says that Chucky needs to transfer his soul into the first person who he told he was alive, which happens to be Andy. Chucky thanks John and stabs the voodoo doll in the heart. Detective Norris and Karen arrive and report that John managed to stay alive long enough to tell them about Chucky's plan to transfer his soul into Andy. He says Chucky's heart is almost human. The only way to kill Chucky is through the heart. And with that, John dies. Chucky arrives at the hospital where Andy is staying. He finds the keys and unlocks the door. He pulls off the bed covers to find a pillow underneath. Andy, scared, runs out of the room. Dr. Ardmore grabs a hold of Andy and tries to inject him with something to sedate him. Chucky picks up a scalpel and stabs the doctor in the back of the leg. As the doctor falls to the floor, Chucky sticks an electric band on his head and turns up the voltage. The doctor's face goes black and blood comes out of his mouth. He is dead. Andy returns home and barricades the door. He finds a baseball bat in the closet. Suddenly, Chucky comes down the chimney and kicks down the fire guard. Andy takes a swing at Chucky and misses. Chucky knocks Andy out with the baseball bat. As he starts the chant to transfer bodies, Detective Norris and Karen break through Andy's barrier. Karen grabs Chucky, but he begins to attack her, so Detective Norris throws Chucky off of Karen. Chucky slices him in the back of the leg and hits him on the head with the baseball bat. Karen then shoots Chucky in the leg. Chucky begins fighting with Karen, and at one point she is able to cage him inside the fireplace with the fire guard. Andy proceeds to light a match and set Chucky on fire. Andy says that he will never forget that smell. Somehow, Chucky manages to escape the fireplace and starts climbing over the sofa as he burns. Andy runs to get the first aid kit for Detective Norris, but Chucky has disappeared. Suddenly, a small foot trips Andy. A black, burnt Chucky is following Andy with a knife as he runs for his life. Terrified for her son, Karen shoots at Chucky. The doll's head, the right arm, and left leg come off. Karen reports that she then shot the doll two more times. Detective Norris's partner, Jack Santos, appears, and Norris is trying to convince Santos that the doll is alive. Santos does not believe a word he is saying, but is suddenly attacked as the doll's body pops out of the air vent and starts strangling him. Karen manages to get the doll off Santos, and Detective Norris shoots the doll in the heart. Blood spatters, and Chucky is finally dead. Thank you so much for joining me for this very special April Fool's Day episode of the Nocturnal Mysteries podcast. I will be back soon with a new episode for you. If you would like to keep up with the show, you can follow me on Instagram at Nocturnal Mysteries Pod, TikTok at Nocturnal Mysteries, or on X at NoctMistPod. After the episode releases, make sure to check out the show's TikTok, as I usually post a video with whatever I've been talking about. If you have anything you would like to hear me cover on the show, please don't hesitate to reach out on social media and let me know. Also, I am honored to be a part of Bad Secret Media with one of my personal favorite podcasts, The Secret Levels Podcast. You can go to badsecretmedia.com to find all the information on all the shows that fall under the Bad Secret Media umbrella. If you would like to support the show, the best thing you can do is rate or review the show wherever you listen to it. This will help others find the show and share in the spooky with the rest of us. All episodes are researched and written by myself and edited by the man behind the mysteries, the show's executive producer, Toby Von Doom. You can find him on social media at Toby Von Doom. Until next time, stay curious, stay weird, stay kind, and before leaving the board, don't forget to always say goodbye.